Welcome to this episode of Horrific History and Hauntings. I'm Beth.
And I'm Raimi. We're your hosts, here to talk about the stories that the history books ignore.
From horrific epidemics and ghostly hauntings to the catastrophes and tragic events that have sickened humanity.
Yes. What kind of tragedy do we have today for history? Any idea?
Well, we're going to be talking about bridge disasters, but today in history, which is April 10th, in 1834, April 10th, a fire at the LaLaurie Mansion in New Orleans revealed a secret room where enslaved workers were cruelly treated by Delphine LaLaurie.
LaLaurie,
yeah.
Oh, I've seen her on American Horror Story and then had to do some research myself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lovely lady.
That was a joke.
Yes, that's a joke. She was not a lovely lady at all. She was a horrible woman. Rescuers found an elderly enslaved woman chained in the kitchen during the fire while LaLaurie saved her belongings. How do you say her name? Is it LaLaurie? I've heard LaLaurie and I've heard what you just said, LaLaurie.
I haven't taken French in a very long time.
I'm going to say LaLaurie. It's just easier for me.
American Horror Story, they pronounced it LaLaurie.
LaLaurie?
Yeah.
I'll try.
And I'll just stick with what the American Horror Story people said because I don't know.
I don't know French.
Oh, I took it, but it was not a great subject for me.
Yeah. She admitted she started the fire to escape LaLaurie's abuse. LaLaurie's. I don't know. I don't think I'm going to be able to say that. She was chained to this.
She said, I'd rather burn than put up with this woman.
Yeah. She led the authorities to the attic where seven enslaved people were bound with spiked collars.
The thing is, the French, even though they had slaves, they did have laws on how you could treat them.
In New Orleans, there were more laws on how you have to treat slaves and not beat them and abuse them and things like that.
So she was breaking the law.
Yeah.
Even though most countries banned slavery long before we did. So
yeah,
the English were really early in on it too.
After marrying her third husband, Louis, Delphine took charge of many slaves at their home on Royal Street. In 1833, Delphine chased a young enslaved girl with a whip, causing her to fall off the roof and die. She tried to hide the incident, but the police found the girl's body in a well.
That's not the best place to lay it, LaLaurie. People will notice when their water tastes bad.
Ew. Authorities fined Delphine and ordered the sale of the other enslaved people on her property. She evaded this by having her relatives and friends buy the enslaved workers, and then she would bring them back to the mansion and continue to mistreat them until the fire that happened on April 1834.
Can you imagine how much worse it got after they got brought back?
Yeah, she was probably angry. Neighbors learned about Delphine's cruelty, and a crowd gathered in protest. She and her husband fled by boat, leaving their butler, who also abused the enslaved people, to face the angry mob. They just left the poor butler. I mean, to be fair, he apparently also deserved an angry mob coming after him, but still, cowards.
Back then, it's so weird for this to actually have been a thing that would cause a mob. You would assume the slave owners also they would just kind of ignore it. But apparently, that isn't always the case. Slavery is terrible, and some slave owners were obviously worse than others.
Yeah. She was never charged. Obviously, her reputation in high society was completely ruined.
I do remember she went to France, didn't she?
Again, she like you said. She reportedly died in Paris in December 1842, but I read a book when I was in New Orleans. I used my Kindle and I started reading books about it. And the book said that that's not known for sure.
Some people said to have seen her out in public doing things.
Yeah, some said that they thought she never left New Orleans and just managed to keep somewhat of a low profile.
Yeah.
While staying there, but I don't know. There was also a theory in that book where her husband was a doctor and they seen like genitals being cut off and sewn other places on other people.
Very Frankenstein.
Yeah,
style.
Things like that. Some people assumed that it actually wasn't really her, or maybe she was not the main person to be doing this at least, and it was actually her husband, where he was a doctor, I guess. Mm-hmm. Profession required him not require that it didn't require that, but you know, like,
okay,
surgeries, I guess. I don't know. I need to read that book again, so mm-hmm. Eventually do a full episode on her.
Yeah, because we covered the Countess.
Yeah,
I can't pronounce her name correctly, so I won't say it.
Bowtry.
I keep calling her Elizabeth
Bowtry. Yeah, it's
Bowtry. Sounds much more realistic.
Yeah, it's Elizabeth Bathory, but pronounced Bowtry. But that's all I have for that mean old bitch. Now moving on to bridge disasters. The Dixon Bridge disaster, located in Illinois. In 1869, the Dixon County Council decided to proceed with Lucius E. Truesdale's design for a new bridge. As you can see, his design didn't work because you have a picture there. It's a lovely bridge. Looks like it's doing great.
it looks like a huge flood has ruined it, but it could have just fell. Actually, the way it looks like it just fell because flood water.
Crumbled. Yeah. It crumbled.
It's a very nice design. I bet it was pretty when it was well standing. Yeah.
They chose to carry out this design despite the city engineers warning that it had serious flaws. So they knew it had flaws, and they decided to do it anyway. The toll bridge, which cost $75,000, opened in January 1869, just a few weeks after a different bridge crafted by Truesdell collapsed in Elgin. It wasn't far from there. On the bright side, there were no deaths due to that particular incident.
Good news is they don't stand long enough for people to trust them.
May 4th, 1873, 4 years later, tragedy struck during a riverside baptism.
Oh no.
This was organized by Reverend J.H. Pratt. And as the third person was about to be baptized, the bridge suddenly collapsed.
Did it just drop them off the bridge? What does this have to do with...
No, I think they were under the bridge.
Oh, no.
Yes, they were under the bridge getting baptized in the water.
That seems a weird place to be.
Yeah, I just pushed a button. Did something happen?
Where'd you push it?
The microphone.
Where's the button?
It's either an up button or a down button.
If it says on, you're good.
Okay.
That's the on and off button. That's what the on and off means.
Ah. The bridge became twisted and then shattered into pieces and flipped over.
Oh.
This resulted in the loss of 46 lives.
You would have thought it was a swinging bridge.
Yeah, it wasn't, from what I understand, anyway. Doesn't look like
over.
It.
Flipped over. I shouldn't be laughing. This is terrible.
46 lives were lost, and many were trapped by the wreckage. Another 56 people were injured.
Ah, well, that's not great either.
Yeah. Some individuals faced an even more gruesome fate than the drowning, because they became entangled in the crisscross iron lattice. For instance, 16-year-old Katie Sterling was caught entangled in such a bad way that it took them 2 days to free her from the entanglement. And multiple bodies were found several miles away from the incident site. 17-year-old Lizzie Mackey was recovered at Sterling, approximately 14 miles downstream. And the youngest victims were identified as sisters Althea and Lucia Hendricks, who were 6 and 4 years old.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Next is Tacoma Narrows Bridge. I'm going to need you to click on that link because I couldn't find any pictures. So it's a video. It's not long. You get to watch it collapse. It's fun.
Okay. Oh, I've seen this.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the one who's swaying in the wind.
Yeah.
It's a giant bridge with multiple cars on it at the moment.
Swinging.
Nobody in their right mind would attempt to drive across it at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a car on it who's obviously got on it right at the wrong time.
You got to go to work. Bridge or no bridge. Work don't care.
I don't know. It doesn't show the car falling, but it might very well be part of that mess. It just collapsed. It's just a humongous, modern-looking bridge that just swung in the wind until it fell.
Mm-hmm.
Two-lane road.
It was located in the state of Washington, and the Tacoma Narrows Bridge was finished and open for traffic on July 1st, 1940. It collapsed only 4 months later due to a problem called aeroelastic flutter. I just want everyone to know, I know nothing about engineering or bridges or building, anything like that. So I had to take what I thought was important that I didn't understand at all, and I had to put it in AI and say reword to make it easy to understand for people that know nothing about bridges or engineering. And then I had to use what it gave me to figure out what was going on, what it was talking about, and then move those words around, put it in my own words.
Isn't it
that
the,
way? Because I had no clue.
Is it where like the wind is blowing such a way that frequency of the bridge is harmonized with everything and it just gets progressively worse and worse and worse?
Yeah.
Or is it the way that things drive across it? I'm pretty sure it's not the way drive.
It's not the drive. It was the wind.
Okay.
The wind, they made it. I'll see if I can explain it on down in here, but I'm just letting you know. I had to get AI to dumb this down for me. It was the first bridge to use plate girders for road support, as well as the first of its kind as a cable suspension bridge. It was the third largest suspension bridge of its time. I don't know why it said it was the first bridge to use cable suspension bridge. Maybe the other two were built after it. With a central span of 2,800 feet and a side span of 1,100 feet each. On one side, there was a 450-foot steel girder, and on the other, a 210-foot concrete frame. And I didn't know what a girder was, so I looked it up. It's a large horizontal beam used to support the weight of a structure, and it helps to distribute the load evenly across its length. It had two cable anchorages along the road, 2 5-foot sidewalks, and 2 8-foot deep stiffening girders.
Lots of girders.
Yes, lots of girders. And anchorages are structures designed to securely hold the ends of cables or ropes in place. Pretty much the concrete where the cables are on the land, I believe, is what it's talking about.
Well, something's got to hold it down.
Yes. They provide stability and support.
Not this time.
Mm. The anchorages were built with 20,000 cubic yards of concrete and 600,000 pounds of steel, as well as 270,000 pounds of reinforcing steel.
That didn't work either.
No. It cost $6 million in 1940.
That's quite a lot of money. You know, it looked awful new to be built in 1940, didn't it?
Yeah.
Very pointy.
Yeah. And not long after the Tacoma Bridge was built, it began to dangerously bend and sway in the wind. Even regular winds, it would visibly move.
That sounds alarming.
Yeah. I don't want to go over that bridge. I'll find it another way.
Imagine just driving across as fast as possible. If you had to go.
Yeah.
Before GPS was invented, then you just floor it and hope for the best. Keep it in the road, you know, as long as the road's under you.
Winds reached about 43 miles per hour on November 7th, 1940. The center support started twisting at a rate of 36 cycles per minute in 9 sections, meaning each twist occurred 36 times every minute in 9 different parts of the bridge.
Very unstable.
Yes, and as time passed, the twisting intensified, and it shifted into a rhythmic up-down motion. While the bridge's middle remained still, its other halves began twisting in opposite directions.
It's not as bad as it could go.
It twisted noticeably into 2 parts and shook 14 times every minute. The twisting started because a cable on the north side had broke, which caused the center of the diagonal ties to fail.
It's like, watch me twirl, Daddy.
As parts of the bridge bent up and down, the towers that held them were pulled closer together, and then cracks could be seen. And then the whole bridge fell into the water.
Does it mention people on it or anything?
There was no loss of life during this one.
I guess the fact it was swaying so much.
Dramatic. Yeah, I think the swaying made it very dramatic.
Well, it also made it very clear you shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
Please depart.
A small-scale model, 200 times smaller than the real bridge, was made to study in a wind tunnel and figure out why the bridge collapsed. The tests led to a new idea that the wind caused the shaking that made the bridge fail. The bridge's shape made it wobble, then the wind blew across it sideways. The vertical girdles on the sides allowed the wind to separate and create spinning air, which matched the bridge's wobbling. And these spinning air pockets had enough force to push the girders out of place.
You said girdles. I mean,
girders, not girdles.
I was thinking, is this a...
Girders. Yeah.
I like girdles better. Well, now they figured out what caused it. Let's not do it again.
The issue that caused the Tacoma Narrows Bridge collapse wasn't new, but it hadn't been clearly identified before this. To make bridges stronger against winds, engineers could use methods such as adding more weight, reinforcing trusses, adding guy cables, and using dampers, which are devices used to absorb energy, typically in the form of vibrations, to reduce the movement or shaking of the structure.
As long as they figured it out.
Yeah. In the context of bridges, dampers can help control this by absorbing some of the energy generated by the wind.
Okay.
That's all for that one. Sunshine Skyway Bridge is next. I like the pictures for this one.
That looks tragic.
That's a Greyhound bus.
No! There's a lot of people on
those.
Full
of students.
Beth! Oh, I love this one, she says.
Well, I mean, no, I mean, I like that there were plenty of pictures to choose from. There were even more, but I didn't want to take up any more space. This one is pretty sad for a few people. The Sunshine Skyway Bridge is located in Tampa Bay, Florida. On May 9th, 1980, at about 7:33 in the morning, during a severe storm with poor visibility, the cargo ship Summit Venture collided with the support columns of the Sunshine Skyway Bridge.
This sounds very familiar now.
I don't know. It happened in 1980.
I'm just saying it sounds like recent events.
Mm. The collision caused a 1,200-foot section of the bridge to fall into the water. 35 people lost their lives as a result of the accident. 6 cars, a truck, and a Greyhound bus plunged into the water below. Only one man managed to escape his truck and survive. His Ford pickup plunged onto the ship just before it hit the water, which gave him the chance to get out of the vehicle and swim to the surface.
It looks like the plunge under the ship would cause the problem.
Yeah. There was also a source that said he was, I want to say, a Marine, and that his training also helped him to, I guess, be able to swim better. I don't know.
That's what marine means.
Yeah.
Marine animal, you know.
The Greyhound bus was carrying 26 students at the time. Captain John Larrow was the harbor pilot tasked with guiding the summit venture, which was as long as 2 football fields, through the 58.9-mile channel leading to the port of Tampa. The freighter was already navigating through a thick fog when strong winds and the rainstorm struck it. Along with this, the radar was useless.
Why? Wow.
They just couldn't read it. I don't know if it was because of the weather or the fog, or I don't know how radars work, but for some reason, it wasn't working. The captain had to decide when to turn between 2 of the Skyway's main columns. He was also worried about another ship leaving the bay at the time and heading straight towards them, but they had lost communication with this ship. If they hadn't lost communication, they would have realized that that ship decided to stay put instead of going into the fog and the storm. So they had nothing to worry about, but they didn't know that because they lost the communication with it.
Just a bunch of bad things happened at once.
Yeah. If he had attempted to stop the summit venture, the strong winds could have potentially caused the freighter to lose control and collide with the bridge. So he decided to try to get the summit venture between the bridge pillars. However, he didn't realize that a gust of wind had shifted directions, and this pushed the freighter out of the channel and off course. Also, the ship was empty and riding on high waves.
So he's flying blind and not weighed down.
And it caused the ship to be less stable, yeah. By the time he realized they were about to hit the bridge, it was too late. It was pretty much the, you look up and there's a bridge, it's too late to do anything. Boom. He tried some last-minute maneuvers, but they didn't work. At 7:33 in the morning, the Summit Venture hit the bridge pier, causing it to collapse along with the interstate and vehicles on the bridge above it.
It'd be wild if the interstate remained and the bridge didn't.
It'd be lucky, but very that didn't lucky. Happen. The captain contacted the Coast Guard for assistance and told them to stop the traffic on the Skyway Bridge immediately.
Because it's foggy and windy and stormy and nobody knows the bridge is out.
You can actually find this on YouTube where he sounds very panicked, as he should.
Yeah. Yeah. He just took out a bridge of people on it.
Yeah.
Children or students. I don't know if they're children.
I don't think he knew that at the time. I think it was too foggy. And
well, yeah.
He just knew that the bridge was in the water and partially on his ship.
Phew.
A state investigation cleared Captain Larrow of blame. The new bridge was opened on April 20th, 1987, and the Summit Venture eventually went down off the coast of Vietnam in 2010. At that time, I had a different name because it had changed ownership many times.
Mm-hmm. Changed the name of a ship, and guess what happens?
Yeah. I tried to look more into the Summit Venture going down, but I couldn't find much about it. One source I found said that it was because it collided with another vessel.
Seems about right for that ship.
Yeah. That's all I have for that one.
It took them 7 years to rebuild that bridge section. Yeah.
I really like the pictures on it. This is a hard subject to talk about because it's something that you're going to be more interested in to see. And this is a podcast. It's hard to see. That's why I put pictures for at least you to be able to look at.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of...
I'm pretty sure this next one we covered in a This Day in History because it sounds really familiar. The Big Bayou Rail accident. The pictures are interesting for this one too.
Yeah, they are. A lot of
wreckage
muck
in a swamp.
Wreckage. Yeah. Pretty sure that's Amtrak.
Yes, it is. This happened near Mobile, Alabama.
Mobile.
September 22nd, 1993, at 2:45 in the morning, barges carrying coal, steel slabs, iron pellets, and cement.
Anything heavy they could imagine.
Yes. That the Movila, I believe is how that's pronounced, was towing, struck a bridge support pier, causing the girder to shift 38 inches out of alignment.
Well, that's plenty to cause a problem.
Mm-hmm. Because 8 minutes later, the Sunset Limited train raced over the bridge at about 72 miles per hour. The impact of the shifted girder caused the bridge to collapse, and the locomotive flew off the 12-foot trestle and soared 24 feet into the air.
Who watched this happen? The ship?
There were survivors. Yeah, it's pretty much what survivors have said.
Fascinating.
2 other locomotives and 4 other cars plummeted into the 30-foot deep bayou. The accident resulted in 47 deaths, and it injured 102 passengers.
I'm surprised there wasn't more deaths. Mm.
The train's diesel fuel tanks broke open, leading to the formation of a fireball, which caught the water on fire as well.
Ouch.
Yeah. And investigators believe the river being caught on fire may have caused some of the deaths, sadly.
There's two ways to die here. Three ways. Impact, drowning, or fire. None of them are particularly pleasant.
Nope. Investigators stated that the barge pilot, Willie Odom, lacked the ability to read the radar and did not possess a river chart. He also did not have a compass.
So he was going by sight.
Yes, and it was foggy.
The fog seems to have had a big hand in a lot of these.
I want to say that he was looking for a place to tie off the barges to hold off, and he thought that was, he didn't realize it was a bridge. He thought it was somewhere he could tie the barges until it cleared up, but
unfortunately,
it was not. They also noted that he had obtained his license just months prior after failing the exam 7 times. That's not your role in life, buddy. Yeah. Try again.
Wonder why he wanted to do it so badly.
I don't know.
Somebody had him a job waiting, I guess?
Maybe. I really don't know.
What happened to him?
He was fine as far as I know.
How did he even pass the test if he couldn't read them?
They didn't really have strict...
It's river boating, so I guess...
They didn't really have strict safety things going on. I think after this, they decided to make it a little more strict to be able to do this now.
I'd say so.
Investigators also found that Mr. Odom made other mistakes by not parking the barges along the riverbank instead of continuing through the fog. Like I said, I believe that's what he was trying to do, and he didn't realize it was a bridge and not a place where you can do that.
Yeah.
He believed he was going upriver as well, but he ended up pretty much making a wrong turn into the big bayou.
So he didn't know where he was.
No.
He was lost with a whole lot of heavy stuff.
Yes. And that's all I've got for that one.
Oh.
This one is a different kind of bridge. It was a walkway. Well, I think it was multiple walkways, actually. You can see in the pictures that the third picture, if you look closely, there's a man crushed and there's a leg.
Oh golly. Oh no.
Yeah, and then there's this whole little graph picture where you can kind of get an idea of why.
Engineering disasters. I watched something about this when I was a lot younger.
Well, it was definitely a disaster. July 17th, 1981, why does this seem to be like all in the 80s and 40s?
The 40s, we had built a bunch of stuff right before the Depression, and after we couldn't take care of it during the Depression, and anything built during the Depression is built on a budget. And so the 40s is when all that stuff started to go wrong. And then the war started, the Great Second War, and then the money started coming in to do things better. I'm just guessing, but I'm pretty sure that probably had a lot to do with it.
I don't know. July 17th, 1981. During a tea dance in the Hyatt Regency Hotel.
Oh, and in the 80s, everybody was just high on cocaine.
Oh. Is that pronounced Regency or Regency?
Regency.
Regency. It's located in Kansas City, Missouri, and it had two suspended walkways collapse. The walkways and the dozens of people on them plummeted onto the crowded dance floor underneath, probably where that man was in that picture.
It's seeing as he is under two layers, then yes.
Yeah.
He never stood a chance, unfortunately.
Nope. The cause of the collapse was due to a fatal flaw in the design of the walkways. The original design called for a single set of support rods for both walkways. However, during construction, this was changed to a single set of rods for each walkway, meaning the connections had to support twice as much weight.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, the connections failed under the weight of the walkways and the people on them, causing it to collapse. Them.
Did the people on the top one survive, I wonder? Because two layers under it probably didn't.
I'm going to assume, be the most likely to.
Because, you know,
be able to survive.
You would think that their ankles might go and their knees would go. Yeah.
Some major injuries, but more likely to survive than the people that are getting crushed under them.
Under the both of them, yeah.
In the aftermath, investigations revealed a series of errors in the design and the construction process, as well as a lack of oversight and communication between the various parties involved. Over 114 people lost their lives and over 200 were injured. It remains one of the deadliest structural failures in U.S. history.
Makes me all the more... I watched shows like this when I was young about like engineering disasters.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me very uncomfortable to get on man-made structures that are far off
the
ground.
See, I'm the opposite. I still look at this, and I trust a man-made structure over me any day.
No. I mean, I'd rather be on the side of a cliff than in a skyscraper.
I'd rather be in the skyscraper. I don't want to be on the side of the cliff just a rope.
When I learned that the Bristol Motor Speedway is made to sway in the wind, I was appalled. I knew about it and I knew why it's done, but I could not, I couldn't stomach it. I would be.
Well, isn't that done that way? So like that other bridge with the wind, it doesn't cause you to, along with the race cars making vibrations and movements as well.
Yeah. Being very rigid, it is not a good thing.
Yeah. If it stayed still, wouldn't it be more likely to fall?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't mind it swaying. I just realized that the fact they had to do that to make it stand, I shouldn't be there.
The Hyatt walkway collapse also served as a wake-up call for the engineering and construction industries. It led to a significant amount of changes in building codes and regulations. And this was an attempt to keep such a tragedy from happening again.
Yeah, fair enough.
These changes included stricter guidelines for structural design, such as increased requirements for engineering inspections during construction and improved communication protocols among all the parties involved in building projects. There was also a stronger focus on making sure that any changes made during the construction followed the approved plans and were carefully checked by experienced professionals,
mm-hmm.
which should have been a thing to begin with. But
we tend to only come up with a law for something
after 114 people die.
After a bunch of
and
deaths.
And 200 yeah. are injured.
Or a lot of money.
And there's a lawsuit.
A whole lot of money lost, too, that could cause it.
Yeah. That's
the way it goes.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunate. You got the idea for this because of the recent bridge collapse in Baltimore, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Another tragedy, but it seems a bit soon to talk about.
And that's all of the bridge disasters I have. I may do a few more later on, but we'll see.
There's a ton of them.
Yeah. And I didn't do the Silver Bridge because we covered most of that in the Mothman episodes.
Yeah.
So that's why that one's not on here.
Okay.
Well, if anybody enjoyed this and wants to go back to that.
Considering recent events, bridge disasters seem like a...
Mothman being spotted in Grundy, Virginia.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a lot of tragedies here lately when it comes to stuff. All righty. Thank you for telling me about this. If you like what you heard here today, we have other podcasts. We're a part of the Gruesome Gaming Group Podcast Network. And we have other shows like Brother Knows Quest. It's where I talk to Beth here about, and I tell her about different tabletop role-playing games, a different one each week. And then we have Leveling Duo. It comes out not every week, but it comes out whenever we find a new video game we really want to talk about. It could be me, Beth here, me and my friend Dakota. Just depends on who we're playing. You can find those. There'll be a link in the description. It will be a Linktree link, so you'll click on it and take you to a bunch of other links. The first one on the list will be our website for Gruesome Gaming Group. It has all of our podcasts, a sample of each of the podcasts or other shows, and you can subscribe through the links on each of those. Below and then outside, other links in the Linktree will be all of our socials and ways to reach out to us if you want to go that route. TikTok, YouTubes, all that. And then beneath the Linktree link itself will be a option to email Beth or I. There's two different emails. Use either one you want. It will get split between the two of us. We will share them with whoever you want to talk to. We reply to those if someone emails us and give us ideas, stuff to talk about here. And then below that will be an option to send us a tip. It is appreciated if you do that. We use it to help keep the podcast hosted. It helps out a lot. Keep the reviews coming. Once we get enough, we'll talk about, have a whole episode dedicated to the reviews and the stuff people have said. We enjoy seeing or hearing from you. And I guess that's it. Thank you for listening. I've been Ramey.
And I'm Beth.
This has been HH&H. Bye-bye.